It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282. And let's talk legal.
And Cecil Harvell joins us solo here this morning. Good morning, Cecil.
Yes, sir. Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
And what are we talking about?
Wes is on a little bit of spring break, which is so very nice. And I am here.
Yeah.
So, Ben, yesterday I had two back-to-back appointments that kind of reminded me this morning that maybe what we're going to do this morning is go back to what we might call back to basics, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The first appointment was a nice gentleman who has lost his wife, unfortunately, and came in and, of course, has a deed to property, land, that is, that she owned in her name. She had inherited this land, and it was placed into her name by her parents. Of course, they had been married for many, many years, this gentleman and his wife, who has recently died. And, of course, the next question was, well, you know, did she have a will? And the answer was no, she did not have a will. Well, the next question is, you know, did she have children? Do you all have children? And, of course, his answer was, well, no, we do not have children. She has two children from her first marriage of many, many years ago.
Right.
But we do not have children together. And so immediately, you know, as the lawyer there, I know, unfortunately, that I now am going to be a bit of the bearer of the not great news. And I had to tell the gentleman, well, we'll be glad to help you, and we can help you, but I need you to understand I must be out front with the information that this property will vest now in you and her two children, a third, a third, and a third, from her prior marriage. In other words, she had two children.
Right.
So the property will vest three ways. And, of course, he was very concerned about that, not to mention the fact that that one of the children is estranged, and he did not even know where that particular child would happen to be. But we're going to have to find that child. Now, Ben, what is the back to basics? The back to basics, my friends, is, you know, let's have a last will and testament. I mean, this nice lady could have easily and very not very expensively, I might add, had a simple will that just simply leaved everything to her husband and made him executor of her estate. And all of this would be passing in a summary way, if you will, without much need for lawyers and consternation and delay to this nice husband. But instead, we are in a situation where, you know, the children are going to need to sign certain waivers of bond, certain agreements as to the disposition of this property. We're going to have to locate this estranged child. The list just kind of goes on and on.
Right.
All because of the fact that we didn't have a last will and testament. The next file that I happened to have, this is all yesterday, was a very nice lady, elderly lady, who came in without her husband. She said that he was not really engaged at this point in their estate planning or elder law planning, but that she was, and that she was going to come to the appointment and then go back home and kind of tell him what he needed and what they needed to do.
Okay.
Okay. And she pulled out her will, their wills. And of course, lo and behold, you know, these wills are dated, you know, 1978. They are in pretty good form in terms of everything to my wife, everything from the wife to the husband, and then collectively to our children. The problem though with the will is that the will, did not have the signatures signed in the presence of a notary. And so the will, the witnesses, are not self-proved, and it would be necessary at the time of death of either one of them to find those witnesses.
That's right. Yeah.
And of course, 1978, my goodness, that's a long time ago. And it would be just very difficult to find them. And as a result of that, it is possible that those wills would not be admitted to probate. And that then puts that estate, believe it or not,
right,
in the same posture as the one that I had the hour before.
Was there a will originally from North Carolina?
The will was from North Carolina. These 1978 wills were done in North Carolina. They were even done here in Morehead City. Okay, but again, you know, the witnesses were not signed the will. The witnesses did witness the will, but the witnesses did not sign in the presence of a notary.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have. We have an issue there. She was a bit surprised that the wills were not, you know, adequate potentially. And I understand that because from her perspective, you know, gosh, Mr. Harvell, we name each other. We then name our children.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What else would we do in a will other than that, you know?
Right.
But that really wasn't the issue. The issue was more the formality, the legality of the signatures on the document.
Yeah. So, you know, if in the event that one or both had passed away, you would have something, but it would still be difficult to track it all down.
It would be. It would be. And of course, you know, Ben, all of us are wanting to save on cost in an estate, save on delay in an estate, not have it drag on, not have any wrinkles, because wrinkles, you know, end up unfortunately costing dollars to the client. So so she understood the explanation. She understood the necessity that she go back home and tell her husband that it's best that they get a more up-to-date will, and that the signatures all be signed and that they sign in the presence of a notary. She, of course, did not have a power of attorney, so we certainly need the power of attorney, which we've talked about so many times on this program. And so you begin to see, you know, as I said at the beginning, kind of this back to basics. A last will and testament is a document where we declare our will upon our death. We pass our property, sometimes known as the residuary estate, meaning our real property, land, our personal property, to our respective heirs. And in certain percentages, if you will, or in equal distributions to the children. In the state of North Carolina, it is possible to exclude a child or grandchild. It's not difficult to do. It just has to be expressly done. I hereby declare that I make no provision for my child, John Doe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It can be just that simple. John, it doesn't need any other language, language can be added, such as, you know, I've been estranged from my child, John Doe, and do not know his whereabouts now for many years, or John Doe is of no personal need. That many times is language that parallels the fact that John Doe is on Medicaid, if you will, because he's handicapped.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, or had a mental, you know, a physical disability from birth. Okay, and so parents cannot many times leave their estate to a child who has a physical disability from birth.
Mm-hmm.
So there are certainly ways that we handle this, but the language needs to be clear. It doesn't need to be terribly involved, but it needs to be clear. The other thing that North Carolina requires is that the signature of the signer of the will and the witnesses, which North Carolina requires too, that all three of those persons then sign in the presence of a notary. And what this does, Ben, is it makes these signatures they're authenticated. They are authenticated from the moment of the signature on the paper many years ago.
Right. So the attestation to the notary is what makes that. I mean that makes that valid.
Correct.
Because the notary is a public official.
Correct. And they are saying on the document that I, notary public, saw John and Mary and Sue sign the document, and therefore, many years later, when the document becomes becomes necessary to place on probate, to place onto public record, the signatures do not have to be verified. They are already authenticated or verified because of the notary. Now, again, just like the lady that I mentioned, and I have to be careful about my language here, it's not that the will is not enforceable without the notary. Her will is enforceable, but you're going to have to find those witnesses.
That's right.
And in her file, those are 1978 witnesses. Mm-hmm. They could have died. Mm-hmm. They could not still. In fact, they probably most likely have.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe have moved away or just cannot be located for whatever reason. So we don't want to put our estate, our document, in such a precarious position. We want the signatures on the document to be notarized so that they are authenticated.
Okay, well, I have more to come in a moment. If you have questions about this, as you said, back to basics, talking about wills, if you'd like to call in, or this or any other legal subject, 247-7282. We're back to the basics with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. Cecil Harvell with us talking about wills.
We are. Ben, there's so many little things that our listeners are aware of. I mean, again, so many last will and testaments do not have a contingency provision.
Mm-hmm.
Things like, you know, I hereby appoint my husband appoints the wife, but there isn't then a contingency.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe there's the appointment of a child that's a contingency. But, you know, just like this lady yesterday, bless her soul, she had lost a child.
Mm-hmm.
She had four children,
but
one of her children had died. And so, you know, it might have well been that that was the name that was in the contingency slot.
Mm-hmm.
And it, of course, needs to be changed, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be, a living child to serve as the contingent executor. So, the documents many times will say things like, I hereby give things to my each other, again, as I'm saying over and over this morning, to my spouse, to my husband, to my wife, and then to my children. Well, what if a child is not living? Then what happens to that share?
Yeah.
There has to be, the devil is in the detail, which are many times the contingency provisions.
And that's where you would either, obviously in consultation with the client, say, well, then if this child dies, then their heirs will, or they won't.
Correct. I mean,
because you don't have to.
And a lot of times I get the question is, well, you mean it doesn't go to my son's wife? Okay, it doesn't go to my daughter's husband. I thought that it would go to my daughter's husband. They've been married for 20 years now. And, of course, we have to discuss, does it go to the daughter's husband or does it go to the daughter's children?
Right.
Who would be the grandchildren of the maker of the will? You know, the lineal descendant would be the daughter and then the daughter's children. Is a child a stepchild? Of course, Ben, you know, in our current, 2019, my goodness,
we have lots of different combinations
of families.
We have
a lot of stepchildren, okay? We have people who are married and have been married for a while, and little Johnny, who is now, you know, 19, was there when they got married, and he was 6 months old.
Right.
He is really been raised by that mother or that father.
But
biologically, he is not that mother or that father's child. He's a stepchild. He's a child that was living and breathing and being loved, but not the biological child of the maker of the will. It's, again, very easy to include this child. But if this child is not expressly, clearly, included, then it's very possible that that this child would be, you know, left out, which could be a tragedy in this family, in any family. So the contingent provisions are very, very important. You know, Ben, it's just fascinating what we do every day, because, you know, I'll ask a client, for instance, on the stepchild issue, because we, you know, as a lawyer, we just are, we have to be very detailed in our thinking. I'll say, how many children do you have? Well, I have three children. All right. One of your children is Mary. How many children does Mary have?
Mm-hmm.
And the client just immediately says, well, Mary has two children.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, well, that's great. So you have two grandchildren. Now, were Mary's children biological? Oh, no. One of the children. So see, the client thinks of them as a child.
Yes, that's right.
It's up to the lawyer to catch that detail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, did Mary, you say Mary has two children. Those are her biological children. Oh, no. Little Johnny was, you know, was brought to the marriage by her husband who they got married, but he's been around the whole time. I mean, he's been in the family forever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's not in the law a child under lineal descendant
mm-hmm.
law. He can become that if he's included in the document. So
then you have children born out of wedlock.
Correct. Yeah. We do have that. So I've said so many times on the program that it is up to the good lawyer, my friends, to bring out this information.
Mm-hmm.
And to ask the necessary questions to make sure that the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. We've talked about this a lot with regard to the what I kind of call the second stage of every file, which are, quote, funding issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just fine and dandy for the will to say, everything to husband and wife and then to the three children. But yet, you know, on the stock account down there or on the $100,000 bank account down there, you know, only one child
mm-hmm.
is titled on the account.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, that's not equally
mm-hmm.
a third, a third, and a third, which is what the last will and testament says. So that has to be caught. That has to be discussed. It's up to the lawyer to bring those issues to the table so that the client understands that even though their document might very clearly express a third, a third, and a third between the three children, the way they have their accounts titled
mm-hmm.
Is contrary or not consistent with that.
Right.
Beneficiaries on IRAs and annuities and life insurance policies, those all need to be checked. Many times clients will just assume that it is a certain way. And when we in fact talk to the company about it and get confirmation, you know, there's either no beneficiary or the beneficiary, designations are incomplete.
Okay. All right. Need to take a break. We'll come back and finish it up here in just a moment with Cecil Harbell from Harbell and Collins Attorneys at Law. If you want to go online to harbellandcollins.com, you can listen to past shows and see all the information about making an appointment as well. Hey, welcome back. Let's Talk Legal with Harbell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, and Cecil Harbell explaining some of the basics, and that includes getting a will.
It does. Ben, interestingly, you know, a last will and testament in the state of North Carolina, this is a question that we get routinely. It can be handwritten.
Mm-hmm.
That is known in the law as a holographic will.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big word for meaning all in my handwriting. And if the handwriting can be verified, which it usually can be, no witnesses are required of this will because,
mm-hmm.
after all, it is in the penmanship, the handwriting of the decedent.
Right.
And so it is self-authenticating. I mean, if the handwriting can be proven, then it is, in fact, the last will and testament of the person who has left us. It does need to be signed. It has to show a clear intention that it is a last will, usually mm-hmm. with language like, these are my wishes upon my death, or it is my desire upon my death, or whatever the case might be. This is known as a holographic will. Obviously, Ben, you know, these are the types of wills that take years to settle. All sorts of usually lawyers involved. There are no contingency provisions at all. Not real clarity as to the disposition of the estate. Lots and lots of, if you will, you know, monkeys, you know, uncovered in wills like this. Yeah. So we do not recommend them at all, but North Carolina does recognize a holographic will.
There was a Canadian farmer who became trapped under his own tractor. His name was Cecil George Harris. He carved into the tractor fender a statement that said, in case I die in this mess, I leave all to the wife, and signed it, Cecil George Harris, and it was accepted by the court.
That's interesting.
And that fender is on display at the law library at the University of Saskatchewan.
Yeah,
great. But it did. I mean, it had the intent and had a signature.
Right. That's right.
And it was pretty clear who did it.
Yeah.
Because when they found it. This is something that is a kind of a almost like a last resort. A lot of people think that it's an easy way to go, but like you said, it usually has a lot of pitfalls.
Yeah, because it just doesn't address the contingencies, you know. As you said, on the fender, I give it to whoever. Well, but what if she's not living?
That's right. Right. No contingency there.
Right.
But it is something that is, a lot of people resort to, but you ought to at least, maybe it's temporary, take it and get the real attorney to look it over and write a new will for you. You can do that with Harvell and Collins, obviously. You can go to harvellandcollins.com and find out more information there. And also, give them a call, set up the appointment, because it's going to be a lot easier than you think to have that last will done. And so give the folks at Harvell and Collins a call, and then you'll find it at 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.